Support for this podcast comes from the FAU Master of Science in Finance program. The 16-month Master of Science in Finance trains current and future professionals for productive careers in financial management, investment banking, and investment management. The program includes Bloomberg certification and preparation courses for the CFA Chartered Financial Analyst designation. Learn more at business.fau.edu/finance.
Hello everyone, welcome to Nightline. I'm Rainford Knight, finance professor at the FAU College of Business. And joining me today, once again, is my guest, Philippe Dubois, an executive PhD student at the college. Philippe's background is also in finance, where he worked both at the family office space as well as in the asset management sector for Morgan Stanley. Philippe, welcome.
Thank you, Rainford. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure being here on Nightline.
Thank you, Philippe. So let's get into this. Our topic today, we're going to look at the SBA loan program that the government has approved. The first one was $349 billion, and that ran out in 14 days. And by all accounts, it didn't go well. It was not a smooth process.
No, not at all.
And can you give me your two cents on, now we have a second round. So based on the first round, what were some of the problems, and do you think those are going to be fixed with the second round?
Let me tell you this. I'll start with some numbers about unemployment, and we'll work our way backward until the question to explain exactly what's going on with this program and the reason why it has failed, and it's failing right now if we don't change something within the program, within the legislature. So what happened? 3.8 million people filed for unemployment benefits, right? So what does that give you for the time that we've been shut down, quote unquote? It's a total of 30 million people that have gone into unemployment, that have filed unemployment benefits. In March alone, U.S. cut back spending by 7.5% in 1 month alone. 7.5% cut spending. So I was reading newspaper the other day, and Mark Zendi, who's the chief economist at Moody's Analytics, he says it's vitally critical that small businesses make it through this crisis. And I couldn't agree more. So just to give you some data taken out of the 2017 census, 7.8 million businesses in the U.S., only 20,000 have more than 500 employees. So a vast majority are so-called small businesses. 50% of jobs in the U.S. are provided by companies with less than 500 employees. So a big chunk of the economy, right? Less than 25% of all jobs in the U.S. are created by companies that have less than 50 employees. So now my point is, you can see how important it is to save these small businesses. Well, Congress passed the CARES Act, right? PPP to keep employees on payroll, which is the payroll protection program. Right now, so far, $660 billion per Congress. And what is the problem with this program? This program is designed to keep employees employed, right? So a company will file for to get this PPP money. You get the PPP. The PPP states that the money is to retain employees or to rehire these employees, right? And 75% of that money is supposed to go to payroll. Only 25% can be used in things like interest payments or rent and other these categories.
So, agreed. But, you know, just to pipe in here, what's wrong with the 75-25 split? And that most people are saying is, if you're running a restaurant and a salon, particularly in
a barbershop, exactly.
Your highest costs are not employees; they're your rent.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So
it's upside down, and so many businesses in there are suffering because 75% of the money has to go towards payroll. Now, if you can't pay your rent, are you going to actually be able to have a payroll?
You got it. There you go. So employees are receiving paychecks.
Can't pay your rent.
Right. Employees are receiving paychecks. Right, and the company that hired them in the first place does not have the support needed to support their fixed costs in order to keep the place open. So you're going to have employees with paychecks, but no small businesses. What's going to happen at the end of the day? So this is the problem that we're facing right now. You know, the National Federation of Independent Business said that only 1% of the people applied for the EIDL have received something. The EIDL is another one where the problem is they promised a grant of 10 grand if you apply and you get approved. Well, it's not really 10 grand. It's $1,000 for employees or more. When we see that 4.5 million of businesses have less than 4 employees, and these are the businesses you just mentioned, right? The restaurants, the barbershop, right, the salon. So that's the issue in the legislation that have caused so many issues. So my question is, where are we headed? Where are we headed? What has to change? And how we're going to make sure that we're supporting small businesses as opposed to the way it is right now? Look, I don't want to sound like a robot. Of course, I care about people. Of course, people have to have a paycheck. But if you don't have an engine to generate the paycheck, if there's no demand or there's no productivity, there's no supply, how are you going to keep the economy going? So that's my question.
Agreed. And, you know, if you look at the second package that's been approved, the first one ran out in 14 days. All of the estimates are that it's likely that the $470 billion package that was approved is likely to run out as well. It's problematic. So on top of that, now you have issues around the, I was reading the Justice Department's now investigating the PPP for evidence of fraud, high unemployment. So the scenario is not going well in terms of economic growth. You said you have the negative GDP numbers coming out. You also have an issue where now, even though rates are zero, this is the highest savings rate in the U.S. since 81. So in a consumer-driven economy,
exactly,
if people aren't spending right to drive demand, the growth is going to be stagnated for quite some time. So
that's right.
So it's a complicated scenario.
Yeah, you're going to have high saving rates, and then that's it. You're stuck right there.
It's an interesting problem. It's a major problem. It's a pretty serious problem. You know, let's talk about the oil market, because that was also another interesting thing that happened, where the oil futures went negative. This is another supply and demand shock occurring in the market. Can you give us your perspective on that briefly?
I have to be honest, I don't have any experience in oil, but I've been reading stuff and I can understand what's in the stuff that I've been reading, right? I spoke to a friend that has great experience in the commodity sector. I know that he has exposure in that. I said, what's going on in the market? Can you help me understand? Negative price for future that expired on May 10th, if I'm not mistaken?
It was April, actually.
April. April 20. So the issue, the reason why it went negative from my understanding is that nobody wanted to take the other part of the transaction, right? You had all these contracts coming into expiration. There's no storage in the U.S. So if nobody wants to buy, the price is going to go down, supply and demand.
And to just to interrupt on the storage side, most people don't realize this, but if you're going to store oil in the U.S., the place to do it is a place called Cushing, Oklahoma. And they're tapped out just about. They're almost at capacity.
Of course. So that's the issue. And I was talking to a friend of mine and he says, Philippe, why don't you explain to me what's going on in the oil market? I said, well, it's a problem of storage. He says, well, you know, what's wrong with the storage? I said, well, people don't want to let, if the contract expire, you have to be able to receive 1,000 barrel of oil, right? Or 32,000 gallons of oil. That's 1,000 barrel. He says, that's fine. I'll store it in the back of my house. And we started laughing about it. So now I see that I realized that he understood what the problem was. Now, that does not mean that the underlying price of oil went negative. These were only the future contracts that pushed the price to go down. I don't know if you want to add any color to what I just said.
Well, the storage problem is really major, because now not only do you have a lack of storage, there are tankers now. Everybody, the strategy has been, okay, well, if you can't get a good price for the oil, storage, eventually price will go up. Now, if everybody's thinking the same thing, what do you have? Yeah. All these tankers that were storing the oil, they're at capacity just about. So you have limited storage capacity, and that's why the futures expired at negative. Going forward, futures price higher than the spot, which suggests there might be some recovery from a pricing perspective, but not to bring in lingo, but it's called contango.
Contango, exactly.
We'll see. We'll see. Of the oil-producing nations out there, by the way, their break-even price to survive is way above where the current pricing for oil is. So we have a bit of another layer of economic issues around the world on top of the pandemic and the supply and demand destruction caused from a consumer perspective.
And we've seen the shock that was in the economy when the Saudis said they were going to flood the market, because their fixed cost to extract oil is slim to nothing send, right. it's send, right? Compared to Russia, compared to the US, where it's a bit more expensive, that break-even point is a bit higher for other countries other than the Saudis. So it's a very interesting point. I started personally following the oil market so I can get a better understanding of how the supply and demand works and all the other factors that are very important to understand futures and price of oil. So I think it's very, very interesting as a commodity.
Well, and I think overall, the world's waking up to the power of supply and the power of demand in a number of different markets. And I think that's because it impacts everything, right? The supply versus demand in consumerism, supply versus demand in oil. And I think globally, that's been a huge lesson for across the board in terms of how these two forces impact the things we do, the markets we play in, and certainly the survival of many of the businesses as a result of this pandemic. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Nightline. And thanks again to my guest, Philippe Dubois from the FAU College of Business. Nightline is a part of the FAU College of Business Podcast Network. Learn more at business.fau.edu/podcast.